The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage, from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Bud Elliott. That's Danny Cannell. I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at YouTube.com/Cover3 and everywhere you get your podcasts on demand. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe, smash that like, and come and join us in the chat, aka the Cover 3 tailgate. Where? Yeah, I mean, like, there was a lot of conversation in the tailgate. Like, hey, you ever going to take questions from us? We're like, yeah, bud, we do it on Thursdays. And then we were literally taking questions. And so, yes, this is a great time for you to come join us live and get your question in. But we also have some questions from the big old bag of mail that are, they've been collecting dust, man. We can't let them sit there anymore. Break them out. You go leave us a 5-star review. You put your question in that review. We will get to it in a future mailbag episode. So very excited to do all that. And as always on Thursday, those of you who jump in early and get the conversation going, you know, just cracking a cold one in the tailgate, 8:27 a.m. That's not too early. Not for Gregory Baker. Gregory Baker getting it going here on YouTube.com/Cover3. Asking, who is the most immediate impactful coordinator hire of all time? And Gregory adds, Joe Brady comes to mind first, and I'm not picking nits, but he was a pass game. Wasn't it Steve Ensby?
Right.
But Joe got to call third downs in red zone. Yeah, whatever. Having Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and Justin Jefferson probably also helped too. I'm thinking about instant impact coordinator hires. What comes to mind?
Instant's the thing that's kind of thrown me off a little bit, that I'm trying to grasp of who had the most immediate impact. Because I was initially thinking of Dabo when he was kind of on the hot seat and he was pressured. He had to give up some control and he brought in Venables and he brought in Chad Morris. And like all of a sudden, like that was the start of Clemson's dynastic run.
Great answer for this question. I think that is a great way to say, like, what, because they were one after the other. It was Morris in 11 and Venables in 12. Morris comes in 11. They win the ACC for the first time in 20 years. But then Tavon Austin runs the same play 9 times in a row, all for touchdowns, and a 70-33 beatdown in the Orange Bowl. He fires Kevin Steele. He says, okay, I fixed the offense going into 11. Now we got to fix the defense. You bring in Brent Venables. And like you mentioned, the Clemson ride takes off from there, a peak that is. Pushback?
Yeah, I mean, because it wasn't instant for them.
Right. That's why
in that first season of Venables, Florida State dropped 49 and beat them. That kept them out of the ACC title game. Boston College dropped 31. Georgia Tech dropped 31. And NC State scored 48. I mean, it was like a huge year two impact, pretty much. But like.
So this might not fit the question where it's like, you know, coordinator comes in. Something's fixed in a significant way. Oh, Lane Kiffin, Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty big. I thought Malzahn, Auburn, but he actually got there the year before Cam got there. I was thinking that those two kind of coincided.
Bob Stoops, Florida.
Ooh. I don't remember where it was. Florida's defense struggling at that time?
I mean, they were the fun. I mean, it was Steve Spurrier's offense, which was putting them on the map, and then he helped propel them to the national championship. And they still all were an offensive oriented team. But I do think Stoops, you know, he was only there 3 years before he got elevated again.
What about Todd Monken at Georgia?
That's actually a really good one. I think Mike Leach at Oklahoma. I mean, got there in 99. That was Bob Stoops' first year. And do we count it if he's part of a new staff? Because he came with Bob Stoops.
But our purpose is to have fun and have a conversation here. I love the Bob Stoops. I was Florida defensive coordinator, and the way he always told the story, and after Mike Leach's passing, all this came up, is he said, I want to hire the coordinator that I could not stand facing. Yeah. And he had to get Florida's defense ready for Kentucky's offense when Leach was on the Kentucky staff. And he was like, I want that guy on my side. So I'll count it if only we get to remember that cool connection that they have.
Eddie has a good one. Chip Kelly in 2007 at Oregon.
Belotti hires him.
Yeah.
And then sort of takes off from there. That's a really good one.
There's got to be somebody more recent who I think your ability to do this in the portal era is massively enhanced, because in theory you could bring some guys with you from a prior stop.
Ooh.
You see what I'm saying? Right. Like Penix followed DeBoer to Washington, you know? Like they had worked together in Indiana. Like Kenny Dillingham was followed by Bo Nix from Auburn because they had worked together.
What about did it go straight from Don Brown to Mike McDonald as Michigan defensive coordinator?
I think there was another one
in between?
No, I think it was McDonald. That's actually a really good one.
Because that was, and I don't want to speak for you all, but I always looked at Don Brown as like great defensive coach, you know? And then there was just that narrative, and fair or not, that it was like, we need some new ideas. You know, you can't be running this notebook out again. We gotta make mix things up just a little bit. And that's where I think Mike McDonald represented the new ideas.
Oh, Ohio State guy who's currently there now.
Chip Kelly? Wait, Ryan Day.
On defense.
Knowles.
Yes. Like serious significant impact year one, stats wise, like more improvement year two. Really kind of changed things there.
Yeah. Good call. I like that. Thank you, Greg. Again, jumping in early. This is this one thing we love to do here on Thursdays is get interactive with the tailgate. We'll keep coming back to that all throughout the show. Bud, I need your help.
I need
your help here. Because we get these reports with big words like college athletics leaders discussing revenue sharing. And house antitrust settlement. And like, look, you've got the definitive explainer on YouTube about the NCAA versus house case. You are the expert in the industry on the case itself and sort of what it means for college athletics. And then I open all these stories. And look, I'm not throwing shade. Like Dennis Dodd has a story on this. Pete Thamel has a story on this. Ross Dellinger has a story on this. The most important figures in the future of college athletics are thinking about different models for the future that would include revenue sharing as part of trying to settle a lawsuit that if the NCAA and the Power Conference loses could total $4 billion in losses. But then I open up the stories and they're like, but many hurdles remain. Details are murky, you know, like still the early stages, obstacles ahead. So like, but what's your sense of what they are trying to do and what seems possible to be able to navigate this lawsuit and in doing so kind of set up the format for the future of college athletics?
Sure. So the lawsuit is the house case, house against NCAA. House was a swimmer at Arizona State. We did an 8-minute video because you got to go 8 minutes on YouTube to monetize things. And you should check it out on our channel. I think it's probably like the best short form explainer that we can do on this. Trying to be even shorter about it. They're suing for back NIL because now NIL has been recognized as sort of a right. They have a pretty good case. They got it in front of the judge who also blasted the NCAA the last two times that she had an NCAA-type case in front of her, and she doesn't seem to play a lot of these kind of nonsense circular argument that the NCAA sometimes gets away with at lower levels of court. So anyway, one of the things that the plaintiffs are asking for, in addition to the back NIL, is a new revenue sharing like plan going forward. And Jeffrey Kessler, who is the plaintiff's attorney here, he also sued the NFL and a couple other famous suits. He basically said, like, it's unlikely that we would settle without also fixing that issue or making progress towards that issue. So Dennis Dodd has reported a lot on this. That there's kind of some talk that they could have a $20 million settlement for back NIL. That does not really fix your antitrust issues and other antitrust cases going on. I think that the ultimate play here is it's very clear that the NCAA and its member schools want an antitrust exemption from Congress. Should they get one? I don't think so. At least, certainly not yet. And from Congress's standpoint, A, I doubt they're going to do anything fast because it's an election year. But B, nobody in Congress can sit there and say, hey, these guys have tried something, right? And it hasn't worked. We need to help them out. This would actually be an affirmative step forward. Like, look, we are trying some things. We need you to kind of get the to get the ball across the goal line here, so to speak, to use the football analogy. If you agree to this and you all of a sudden you have revenue sharing and you end up getting some kind of collective bargaining, is that enough to get an antitrust exemption out of Congress? Is that enough to get a declaration from Congress that these guys are not employees? I'm very skeptical on the latter. Like all of these sort of pseudo revenue sharing type models. Like I saw one, I think Dellinger tweeted out. He was like, all right, so it's going to be in-house NIL and require the players to play in games. Like, you know what that looks a lot like?
Employee.
Like literally. It's like play. It's NIL, but it's conditioned on you playing in the games and it's run in-house by the people who run the team for which you're playing, but you're not an employee. I'm very skeptical about that. I'm very skeptical that they can enforce these kids to play in bowl games. The playoff, maybe you have leverage to get guys to agree to do so. Bowl games, almost certainly not. But that's kind of where we are with this, right? I do think we will get to a revenue sharing model at some point. I know the 15 to 20 million has been thrown out there. I don't think you can enforce any kind of cap on it, really, without collective bargaining. And if you did, I think NIL will still exist for a certain extent, because we had NIL before we had NIL, right? Certain schools had a million Chargers and Corvettes in the parking lot long before we ever had NIL even addressed as a term. So that's kind of where we are. I think a lot of this is we know there's a likelihood that we get smoked if we don't settle it. If we do settle it and settle it quickly, it allows us to show Congress that we're at least trying, and maybe our Hail Mary has a better chance of being caught if we've shown and taken some affirmative steps to do so.
Yeah, I was surprised at, you know, most people I think it's going to take place, like it's going to get resolved in the next 12 to 15 months, like sooner rather than later, that we could see this system put in place. Like the settlement's made, it's bam. I think there's so much at stake. Not one of these lawsuits, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, bud, have given the NCAA any sort of hope that they're going to win. Like everything has been against them, like every suit. So they have every incentive to settle. I just think it's going to come down to, can they work out a deal where Kessler and his crew are like, okay, like that seems reasonable. And I'm sure that's what they're talking about now is the numbers and negotiating them and figuring out what's fair. Couple things I thought were interesting, the 15 to 20 million number, that was pretty interesting. And I thought it was also of note that Trev Alberts, when he was at Texas A&M, he alluded like they're keeping aside 15 to 20 as they're like denoting that as a part of their future budgets moving forward.
And then there's layoffs. Side.
Yeah. And that was a part of why he laid out, what was it? 22 staffers, like, you know, pretty long-term staffers in the athletic department to try to do that. So I thought that was interesting. I did ask Dan Murphy, who wrote the piece for ESPN along with Thamel. I said, how do they get around the employee thing? Like, cause that to me is what they want to avoid at all costs. And he was saying, he thinks, you know, could they do it where they pay them as independent contractors? Does that avoid that?
It's possible, but the independent contractor status, there's a certain amount of control that you can and cannot exercise.
Right.
So a lot of the stuff I've looked at looks a lot like an employee status.
Right.
I think that it's totally fine to throw out there a proposal that looks a lot like employee status and try to call them contractors. And what's the downside? That they end up being employees? Okay, at least you tried. But if you want the contractor status, the amount of control that you're able to exercise is reduced.
Yeah, contractor doesn't fix the portal.
Correct.
Like if you're thinking that the revenue sharing model is going to calm down what happens when the transfer portal opens, no, because you're not going to be able to, I mean, just like a lot of independent contractors, right? And this, again, I'm guessing here, but doesn't that seem correct?
Yes, in some cases. I do think that whatever they have will largely fix the transfer portal issue as far as people have with it. And that's a good thing to me. I don't think it's good to have players transfer schools every semester. Like, I think it's good that you have the right to do so, but I don't know that you should always exercise that right, you know?
Yeah. So, Danny, you mentioned 12 to 15 months. The reason for the urgency is this thing is set to go to, like, court January 2025. So, if it gets to court and they lose, I like
that one. Yeah, $4 billion was the number.
And it was like, so can they figure out a way to settle for $1 billion, which is still like but avoid $4 billion? Like, that's kind of the proposal. And then, as Bud mentioned, can you create a format? Because Jeffrey Kessler has other active lawsuits, you know, that are ongoing right now. Can you get into a world where some of those other legal cases end up falling by the wayside as well? So it was one of those stories that I understand why it's happening. It's so hard for me to wrap my head around it because I just want to fast forward to the end. And I know that's
the same. I'm in the same exact place. I hate all this talk. I just want to talk ball.
Yeah.
And yet, like, the one thought that I had when I heard about the number 15 to 20 million, I said, well, what percentage of revenue is that? Because, you know, most professional sports, those athletes split about 50-50. And this is only like 10 to 15% of the split. So, like, is that the next argument that we're going to be having? Or even once they come up with a new model and they figure out a way to pay them, then those athletes who are represented by a union and have lawyers are going to come in and say, well, wait a second. I don't know if 15 to 20% of revenues, that doesn't seem right. And then we're going to be right back to arguing. And are we going to have holdouts like strikes and players, you know, seasons lost potentially? Like, all this stuff just makes my mind want to explode.
I mean, look, the 15 to 20 million cap is flatly illegal if you don't have collective bargaining.
Right.
Because that is entities colluding to not pay people. Like, literally, you guys get sued over this all the time and you keep losing. So that's why you have to get to the collective bargaining stage. If it's collectively bargained and the union doesn't like it, tough, right? Like, okay, you know you can fix that? The next negotiation.
And then how do you negotiate with college athletes that are going to be gone in 4 years? Like, yo, what does it look like trying to get that union all on the same page? Oof. Wild stuff. All right. Let's go ahead and hit our first break. And by the way, speaking of that lockout, we might be addressing that a little later on in the big old bag of mail. But first, coming up on the other side, transfer portal, closed for business. We've got some late activity. We've got a couple of coveted players that are actually still going to be taking visits here in the next week or so. All the latest transfer portal buzz, plus your questions next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, the transfer portal in football, it's finally closed, at least until the end of the season. So let's catch up on the biggest headlines and our thoughts in the portal. One late development, Penny Boone, running back from Toledo that had transferred to Louisville. You're like, hey, Juwar Jordan, you know, we got another game-changing running back. He left Louisville and he arrives at UCF. We've also got Jacoby Criswell doing the boomerang. You know, you compete with Drake May in 2022. Drake May, obviously, third pick in the draft. He gets the job. You go to Arkansas for 2023. You don't get the Arkansas job. Hey, guess what? Mac Brown and Chip Lindsey would love to have you back here to throw you into the mix with Max Johnson and Connor Harrell. Danny, either one of those or any other late transfer portal transactions that stand out to you?
Yeah, the Jacoby Criswell one stuck out because it is that boomerang effect. We just saw Kyle Ford do that, right? He was USC, started his career there, then goes to UCLA, and then decides to go back to where it was. What I'm trying to figure out for some of these guys is, it were they gone and weren't happy and kind of missed their guys? Or is this a case where Mac Brown, you know, is maybe, we've seen Max Johnson, man, we could get a little bit more out of Criswell. Like, hey, is it recruited back, or is it a going back to comfort? And I don't know that answer, but I do think it's interesting, man, because you know, you always warn people all the time, the grass isn't always greener. And you were seeing this happen, you know, pretty frequently, where you go back to sort of that security of what you've known and relationships you've built over time, where I like to see it. I'm glad that they're able to go back, because in, you know, some systems, you know, in the years past, we might not have been able to see that. But now, like from a football standpoint, I'm wondering if he can have an impact and possibly be playing sooner rather than later.
I'm like super excited to see this UCF team. I mean, this is downhill, smash you, big backs, fast backs. You got RJ Harvey. You got Penny Boone. You got KJ Jefferson, who was listed on his, like, he got rung up for like unpaid tickets or some nonsense. When he went back to Arkansas, it was listed at like 260 something. Like, big dude.
Big dude.
That's a lot of good backs coming downhill. Like, anytime Gus Malzahn's like, we're going to chuck it around a lot, I'm like, I'm out. Anytime we're like, hey, we're going to use our excellent wing T roots running game and throw off that and run our series, run our play action stuff, I'm like, I'm in. You got me. And I like the guys they have to do what Gus Malzahn and that staff do best here in Orlando.
That's
That goes back to Auburn, by the way. When they were trying to start white stuff, I was like, immediately no.
Right. Well, I mean, it was Kerryon Johnson, right? Wasn't that like either one of maybe the 21 team, you know, late era Gus Malzahn is like, there's not much of a passing game here, but you know what? He will carry on this whole offense on his back and carry him all the way to like competing for an SEC West title at the end of the season.
I remember, and like, you know, as a member of the recruiting media, you can't influence where a guy goes. But I was sitting on a plane with Sean White, who, when we were flying out to Oregon, and he was like, yeah, I'm going to go to Auburn. I was like, man, that's a great school. You know, like in my head, I'm like, no. Do you see what the guys that Gus succeeds with look like? But you can't say anything, right? Because, like, that's you can't. So, anyway.
I saw the Criswell edition. I read it as neither one of those guys has grabbed the job. And so you're throwing another, you know, throwing another wild card in there, just seeing what sticks.
Let me ask you, as a Carolina guy, okay, how close is this to the Jameis Winston Coker situation? Because remember, like, there were early reports that Criswell was competing with Drake May, and they were neck and neck for a little bit. Now, obviously, I think that's kind of BS, but like, was there anything to that? Like, does he have a real shot to win this job?
I think that, I mean, you would know, but like, Criswell's got tools.
I agree.
Yeah, I think he can be really impressive. I think that it might be a performance thing. And so you're bringing him back, and it'll be a new offensive coordinator than the last time he was there. You know, it'll be a very different offense in terms of what they're trying to accomplish, especially when you're stepping in, you know, Omarion Hampton's, you know, the star that they have decided to invest in on the offense. So what can you be able to offer to that competition? And maybe for Jacoby, there is a, to your point, Danny, there is a little bit of a, he will be happy, you know, being back in Chapel Hill, a place where he spent a couple years. So
could and then there's also the aspect of, wait, I came to Arkansas to start. Who's this Talen Green kid coming in here all of a sudden? Like, whoa, I didn't know that was happening. And then yeah, you don't beat him out.
Bobby Petrino gets hired and maybe mesh with Petrino as well. So a lot of changes. I think that this is a, I think that Jacoby Criswell probably did not have a, what would you say we did, the Jacob Coker, Jameis Winston? You would say that like they tried to make it a competition.
It was a fake competition.
There were days where Coker was actually pretty damn good. And like, I think they wanted Jameis to take it more seriously every day. Like, don't throw the bubble screen passes with your left hand just because you're that freakishly talented. You know, like so, but also like Coker did win a national title. And I think, did he get drafted?
I don't think so.
He
won a national title.
It wasn't insanely fake. We knew who was going to win the competition if Jameis took it seriously every day.
Right. I think that with Drake being young, first-time starter, you might have had some of that for sure. And Jacoby's got enough there to be able to make it a competition. But man, this is a North Carolina quarterback battle that will be probably ongoing till the first week of the season. And I've got no clue on who I would pick. I mean, do y'all have any? Do you want to? You want to throw a little, put your chips behind any one of these three?
I would say it's Max Johnson because of volume. He's played a lot of football and usually going to go with the experienced guy that you know and like trust. That. Let's see what we got first. Let's make sure we give us a chance. We don't want somebody to go out there and throw two or three picks and put us in trouble. So my guess would be Max.
Who do they open with? Like who's on the early season?
They don't do that.
Minnesota on the road. Thursday night.
They'll go with the veteran. I think they'll definitely go with somebody who's played in that spotlight.
Yeah. Thursday night, week one on the road at Minnesota.
If it doesn't go well, then I think you move to the younger kid or Criswell because like their first, they'll be favored over Charlotte. They'll be favored over UNC Central. They'll be favored over James Madison. They'll be favored at Duke. They'll be favored hosting Pitt. I think. That's a nice little run up through early October to work somebody else in with some game action.
I'll say it's either Harrell or Criswell.
Ooh.
I think not
hearing great return, not hearing great feedback.
No, I think that the surprise has been that, remember, we'll see what happens when Criswell gets there. I think the surprise was that Max Johnson did not grab the job this spring.
Right.
You know, I think that is the surprise that has some people unsettled. I sometimes go sunny side on this. I was like, well, it's at least you've got somebody else who's pushing, right? But if you're going out to get a third guy as well, we'll see.
I don't know, and this is not a knock against Max, but have we seen any like numbers on guys that have played at three schools? Like, I mean, there's something about like, okay, so
JT Daniels had an okay season at Rice.
I mean, but that was going down. That was going to easier competition, right?
Yeah.
Like Keaton Slovis, right? He played at three and
it's mixed.
So wait, Slovis played three?
Yeah, did he start at USC?
And BYU.
Oh, Slovis. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, there aren't many of them, but I don't. That's why I don't know if there's ever been like a great example of like, hey, third time was the charm. I don't know if we see many of those.
Yeah, I do think it says something that Carolina took Criswell back. Like, you don't take a guy back who was a bad locker room fit, and you don't take a guy back who you think totally sucks.
So
yeah,
we'll see. How about this? On Monday, You want to do, well, I don't want to do like big winners and losers for the transfer portal because there just wasn't enough. How about on Monday, let's each bring our most significant moves. You like that?
Just from the spring?
Just from the spring. Like on Monday, we'll do our final transfer portal spring wrap, and we'll do it by highlighting specific moves, which you think are the most specific one. Like, what do you think are the most impactful ones, the ones that drew your attention, 3 to 5 each or something like that? And I feel like that'll be a good way to look at it just because there was not as much activity, definitely not as much activity as there was in the winter window. And then really maybe not even as much activity as some may have expected.
The one guy to watch today is Demonic Williams.
Yeah.
From TCU. Today's kind of the decision day.
Do you see his video at LSU? He posted. So he posted like some restaurant, and you know how at the clubs, they bring out the signs and the sparklers. It was a restaurant. It wasn't a club, but like the bright lights and the sign. And it said, welcome to Baton Rouge. Dominic like said, hey, here you go. And he retweeted, had the eyeball emojis. Like, I don't know. It was interesting. I think that was his last visit, right? Wasn't that his final one?
Oh, follow the visits.
And I don't know what the official term here is. Advisor, handler, agent, position, like private.
His camp. Yeah,
his camp posted a photo today that Twitter believes is Oklahoma City in the background.
Ooh.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma maybe that was his first visit. Yet. His first visit was Oklahoma. So
I mean, dude, Toya going back to the portal at UCLA, it made these other guys a lot of money. I mean, I think there's like several $1 million or really close to it D tackles in this cycle because there are some teams that are just absolutely desperate.
We'll see. Keep your eyes on all of that. All right, let's go ahead and jump in. Ooh, we actually have some animation for that. So we love when you leave us a 5-star review. We also love when in that review you put a question. We throw it in the mailbag. Big old bag of mail. So I'm very glad that we discussed this because it was something that's been around in the mailbag for a while, and it falls right in line with our opening conversation. We've got Gingy. Gingy says, so you guys talk about collective bargaining a lot. Maybe this is the future for college athletics. Doesn't that present the possibility of lockout scenarios too? What happens when we have a lockout in college sports? Would players lose eligibility?
Oh, that's very interesting. Boy, I haven't thought
about that. I mean, I think that would be the threat, right?
Yeah. What do you do with employees, though? Because we've had that conversation. Like, how can you say you can't only work 4 years?
Right. I think the whole premise of eligibility, unless you've agreed to the eligibility limits through collective bargaining, is probably going to go away. Also, can you lose eligibility if you're locked out? I feel like we would need to have some sort of like equitable tolling there to where it's like, okay, you know, yeah, you can't run out the clock.
Like the COVID year where all of a sudden we've got a whole like, oh gosh, man, you remember 28, the lockout, right. You know, and then everybody got an extra year of eligibility. And now we've got 3 6th year quarterbacks in the college football playoff semifinals again.
Oh, yeah. I got a great scenario. Because what if you had we don't think all of college football is going to be employees revenue share, right? Do you think there's still be an amateur level?
I do.
So you're locked out from the pros, minor league, college, and you go play at FIU or wherever. Like you cross the picket lines because you just want to play. And so you go to the small schools who have been just mired in just group of five. Hell, just playing for nothing. And all of a sudden, all these studs start going there.
Bronco Mendenhall's like, baby, come on to New Mexico.
Yes.
We do not pay our players, but we can get you on the field on Saturday.
Who loves ball? Let's go. I think that's a real, it's a scary thought to even think of, but yes, I think it is a possibility. Probably not far, because I don't think they'll agree to something for a lengthy period of time, like a 8-10 year window. I mean, I'm just going based on what the CBA, you know, the
Is that what they are for NFL?
Usually they're pretty significant. You know, where they,
they're probably going to be tied to television contracts.
Right. That's true. What the heck do I know?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be like the revenue sharing from, where's the revenue come from? It all comes from the TV deals. Like that'll.
Ozzy had a great point. The lockout, like the pros, it works because the owners are into, like, they have their own wealth. College, like, look what happened when COVID threatened college football.
Yeah.
Look what, like, so they don't, the schools aren't going to want to lock out the players. They're going to want those games to happen too.
Hey, listen, players. It means you got yourself a little bit of leverage right there. How about that? Let's go. All right, let's go to the Cover 3 tailgate. This is a great question, but we're going to talk blue chip ratio here. Will jumped in, another early bird. We appreciate you, Will. He said, how does the transfer portal affect the blue chip ratio? Example, NC State getting Grayson McCall, who is a two-star out of high school but rated as a four-star transfer, and Wesley Grimes, a four-star out of high school but a three-star transfer.
So the blue chip ratio does not include transfers. I do post an extra section of the article showing what it would look like if you want to include the transfers with their transfer grades, obviously. So far, you need freaky players to win the national titles, which is all that the blue chip ratio cares about. Doesn't measure, like, what's your heart, or, you know, like, can you have a really nice season? Doesn't measure, can you make the playoff? It's, can you win the whole enchilada? So far, your very best players overwhelmingly still come from the high school ranks. Mm. They're identified correctly by the top teams. They are signed and they're paid. And they're paid to be retained, and they don't hit the portal. Now, I think with the unlimited transfer type stuff, we are going to see more guys drafted. And so I'm curious to see, like, how good are transfer rankings? We don't know yet. I don't have enough data to say if they're good or bad. I have a lot of faith in the people doing them. Like, one of the guys that does it for us ran personnel at the University of Texas. Okay, like, pretty legitimate. It's not just some rando media guy, you know, and we have a nice team working on it and access to a lot of different, you know, databases and film and stuff. So I have confidence they're pretty good, but I don't have enough data to say, like, at what rate a five-star transfer converts to an NFL draft pick. I don't have enough data yet to say at what rate does a four-star transfer convert to a pick. With high school, I know that. Like, okay, five stars are going to be drafted in the first round X percentage of the time and drafted overall, you know, Y percentage of the time. So I need a little more data before I feel comfortable using the one with transfers as the main one, right? Ole Miss is probably the team this year. I haven't run it yet because I'm waiting on the final rankings and also to figure out where everybody goes, like Williams today. Ole Miss is the one that's probably going to come up. It's like, oh, like, they could bust the blue chip ratio. And I think it'll be busted at some point, probably by a team, you know, that has a super, super stud quarterback that, like, narrowly missed the blue chip ratio recruiting threshold, which is, you know, what I've kind of always thought it would be. And it almost happened with the first year of Deshaun when Nick Saban onside kicked.
We're talking late May for the blue chip ratio?
I think so. Yeah. I got to talk to our transfer recruiting team to figure out when the final rankings will be out. And also, like, I'd like that at least that, like, the real high end kids to have a destination.
Yeah.
You put out a stat right after the NFL draft with the first rounders of how many five stars identified by 24/7 versus the other services, and how you guys basically had them first and had the best hit rate. Can you explain that? Because you can get a little chance to toot your horn too. Because that was
sure. Yeah. Yeah. So 24/7 Sports was the most accurate recruiting service for the sixth year in a row. And I just basically, when Barton left for Vandy, I took over the duty of writing this article. I just used Barton's system, right? Whichever recruiting service had the ranking closest to where the player was picked, they get 3 points. Next closest to the pin gets 2, you know, furthest away gets 1. If you were like a bad outlier, like everybody else had the guy as a 5-star and you had him as a 3 and he hit as a 5, you lose a point. If you went out on a limb in a good way and everybody else didn't want to take that chance, you get a bonus point. So that's basically how it worked. I was pretty impressed with the industry as a whole for how well it looked, considering one of the classes involved here is the COVID class. And, like, quite literally, a lot of these guys didn't play their senior year of high school because they were in a state that was shut down. So everybody does a pretty damn good job, and everybody wants to bang on it. And it's definitely not perfect. And I think if you're claiming it's the be all end all, you're doing it wrong, but they're pretty good.
Thank you, Will. We appreciate the question. I'm going to grab this next one from the big old bag of mail. This one's from Mark. Love you guys. You are by far the most entertaining college football podcast. Keep up the great work. The season will be here before we know it. I have a mailbag question related to the draft. There's been a lot of talk about the top three wide receivers and how they are ranked. I have what I think is entertaining spin on the debate. I've seen these comparisons the most for these players. Marvin Harrison Jr. is AJ Green. Malik Nabers is Jamar Chase. Rome Odunze is Davante Adams. Again, this is how Mark saw the comps. Now rank AJ Green, Jamar Chase, and Davante Adams as they were coming out of college.
I hate the AJ Green comp.
Right. Oh, good. Nice. All right.
I like Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah. Okay.
AJ Green is a much freakier athlete than Marvin Harrison Jr. And they're built differently as well.
Would you say Larry Fitzgerald you would take over Chase or Adams? I think Larry Fitzgerald might be one of the best wide receivers in modern history of the game.
Yes, so. I would. Yeah.
Jamar Chase is tremendous, but also,
Like Chase was good against everybody. LSU is crazy talented, and Nabers could end up being like the best in his class. And I know he just turned 21, guys, or he's like the super young one in the class too. But like I got to say this the right way. He had some good games against good teams, but he really, really lit up bad teams in like a major way.
And oh, like the Georgia State and Army game. It's like, yes, oh, look, like, there's
a... And honestly, like Florida was a horrendous defense. Ole Miss was a really bad defense. Arkansas was a bad defense. I thought Chase showed up in big moments a lot more than Nabers did.
I'd agree with that. I think that, I mean, if you're to ask me to play the game that Mark wanted us to play and to sub out AJ Green...
I ruined the game. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. Listen, no, the point is conversation. I would go Fitzgerald, Chase, Adams. And I can't say I was grinding Fresno State tape, but we were covering the sport when he was there. So I would still put him third out of those.
Oh, coming out of college?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even think it's close. He was behind as far as where he was ranked coming out.
Do you think Davante Adams is still a difference-making wide receiver?
Yeah, he's probably – I mean, he's going to get crushed this year too with quarterback play.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like some of these guys can really elevate and make a average quarterback look really good. It's hard to make bad quarterbacks look good, you know?
Is he on the Raiders still?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, their quarterback crew. I mean, it's one of the more astounding things that we saw was the Raiders not draft
a
quarterback.
And they drafted a tight end. Yes. Oh, my God.
So good. Oh, yeah. That was the other thing in the With the First Pick podcast. That Tom and I did with the mock draft exercise. We got down to it and the mock draft simulator had the Raiders at 11 and we were the odd picks. And as soon as it landed, it was like, all right, Raiders at 11, the need is quarterback. And I was like, Shador, yes, there has not been a more Raiders pick than if you come in and take Shador Sanders. Woo! I want it. Now I don't know what we need to be able to orchestrate that. I don't know if Las Vegas is on Dion's approved list, but
yeah, I think it definitely would. I think he would sign off on that in a heartbeat. Yeah.
Shador Sanders to the Raiders. I need it. That just fits in such a deep way. So I hope it comes true. And if so, we can say it happened on the With the First Pick podcast on May the 1st. Coming up on the other side. We continue to roll through your questions, including some of the most quotable moments in college football. That and more next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, those watching on YouTube.com/cover3 saw the promotion for the Europa League semifinals, which will be on Paramount Plus at 3 p.m. today. It also means, because it's Thursday, the Europa Conference League semifinals are on today. And
where's Tom when we need him?
My beloved Fiorentina are there. Hey, listen, guys, this is like being in the Final Four of the CBI, all right?
Ooh,
you don't let these opportunities get away.
Much clearer picture now.
Fiorentina will be playing at Viola Park against Club Brugge. So we'll see how it goes for Vincenzo Italiano and the rest of the boys. All right, this question comes from King Laws. What is your college football most quotable moment, historical or present?
Better get your popcorn ready.
Oh, Old Lane.
That was a good one. It was so memorable. He felt so good, and then it just went all downhill, like within minutes.
We were talking about the early, you know, like that Clemson on the rise era. Spurrier going after Dabo and Clemson, like all season long, just like little pot shots, coming over for that little, you know, gathering with only about 9 reporters at the end of a Thursday practice and just finding ways to needle them. I mean, Spurrier's going to make a lot of, like, he might be one of the most quotable coaches in college football history.
Yeah.
Or at least the modern era, what I could speak to, but his relentlessness against Clemson was savage. I'll remember that for a while.
He's top three all time, I think, quotable in college football history.
That's a really good one. They play for clicks. We play to win.
Oh, yeah. Dan Lanning.
It was really good from Lanning last year.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's an all-timer from Gundy.
Come after me!
Joe Kines, this is kind of a deep cut. I think we will remember. I don't know if the audience does. I encourage you guys to go find us on YouTube.
Independence Bowl?
Yes. So Joe Kines was like the DC at Bama, very country dude, like career D coordinator. And are they playing Southern Miss or Texas A&M? Somebody. I forgot who was in the game. It's not really relevant. Anyway, he's the interim head coach for the ball game. And he's like, that's about the best I can do there. And it was just like they almost needed to subtitle this guy's English. And it was basically like we're fine as long as we can stop that inside trap. And it was incredible.
06 Independence Bowl against an Oklahoma State team coached by Mike Gundy.
Gundy's got a little like sneaky option love in him. Like they'll get in that weird diamond formation at times and do some funky stuff. The chat's got so many good ones.
Yeah.
Nick Saban after Georgia Southern, the game they ran through us like shit through a tin horn, man.
Yeah, well, good. I mean, did you watch it? They ran through us like shit through a tin horn.
You guys, there are some random ones too you could find from the history. One of a buddy I worked with at ESPN, Dan Hawkins, go play at a murals, brother.
Yes. that was great.
That was a classic. That was an all-time classic. Bobby Bowden was a great one too. His were more, you know, kind of catchier one-liners. My favorite was after the choke it doke. He's doing, I think it was Jack Arute was doing the post-game interview right in the sideline, and the game had just gone zeros. And he's like, Coach, what do you know? How you feel? He goes, well, that was a great win. I mean, tie for our program. And I guarantee you he knew what he was doing. Like, he knew it was a win in theory, but it didn't come across as a win. I thought that was a great one from him.
I believe his name was head coach Bennett Presser at Coastal Carolina about 14 years ago.
Yes.
We need more dogs. Not all these cats. So pretty. Meow. How's my wristbands? Are my wristbands right? How are my shoes? We need more dogs.
Yes. That was epic.
I think like the funniest Bowden one is when Sebastian Janikowski stayed out like all night before the national title game. He basically, he's from Poland, so he's on a different time zone or international. He's kind of on our international standards of discipline. And he played in the game, which was fine.
Leach got to a point where reporters knew that they could, like, insert a coin, press a button, and the quotable vending machine would just, like, spit something out. So, coming up on Thursday, what are your thoughts on Halloween? Boop. And it's like, here comes Mike Leach on Halloween. So, you know,
he's got to be up there like top three, top five of all time quotable.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's so many good ones.
Yeah. What? There's got to be a Harbaugh one, right?
Born on third base.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Chicken's the nervous bird. And he's now, which again, the storyline's great because he's come around on chickens now that he started to raise them himself. Don't eat chicken. It's a nervous bird. And he's like, you know what? Chickens are okay. It shows Jim Harbaugh's ability to adapt, you know, to embrace new ideas.
Spurrier can't spell citrus without UT.
Yeah.
Free Shoes University. Free Shoes
University.
That one too. I mean, he had some beauties.
He had some fantastic ones as
well. You know, like, and then I guess there would have to be a new category that would have to enter the chat. It'd be like the last 15 years, top 15 or top five tweeters of all time. Lane takes the cake on that one for trolling anyone because he's not that quotable. I mean, we did get the popcorn ready, but other than that, like, has he given any great quotes? It's more tweets that he's done.
Have you done a like production meeting with him?
Yes. Yeah.
I think I've heard from multiple analysts who said they were going into the production meeting thinking, heck yeah, this is some time with Lane.
It'll be wild. It was
dead.
Yeah. It was kind of like, let's get to it. Here's the depth chart, you know, kind of low energy. I had the same exact thing with John Madden. He was calling Monday Night Football. And, you know, I pictured this jovial, you know, quote machine who's going to be super nice and super energetic and just kind of what you saw on TV, like kind of loud and going over plays. He was as calm and low key in the production meeting as anybody I've ever seen. Like, just sat there, was kind of, hey, how you doing? Questions very serious and not much interaction. And it was all business. It's kind of surprising.
Good questions?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you know who else I met that I pictured? I don't know why I just thought of this. So I got to do a bit with David Letterman when I was in the Giants. He came out to Giant Stadium. And I had watched Letterman like growing up. So that was like meeting a big star. And I was picturing this hilarious comedian who's going to come in and just wow me. He was kind of a prick. Like, he was like, did not, very low energy, did not have much time for chit chat. Nice. But just not at all what you got on television. It's great. I mean, you see how they turn it on. Just boop.
Well, I mean, if I'm to paint with a broad brush, a lot of stand-up comedians have, like, not the best social.
That's true.
You know, like, it.
Yeah.
It takes something being broken for you to stand up there all alone with a microphone and create that much, you know, laughter and comedy and be that vulnerable. So, you know, when those types are like, oh, man. I was like, yeah, what were you expecting? Someone normal? Right. He is abnormally funny. Like, he's probably going to have an abnormal personality. So
what do you think the listeners say when they get to meet us in person? I don't know. I feel bad because I met one of our listeners. I was in Orlando at a soccer tournament this past weekend. Sunday was when I met this listener. I was starting to go downhill quick. Sniffling, like, and I was like, I gotta get this tournament, get out of here. It was hot. So I did talk for a few minutes, but I was like, man, I was like, I hope I was nice. Like, I hope I spent enough time. I was like, oh, geez. Hopefully our listeners would like us. By the way, we need to get out. We need to get out on the road.
We need to do a live show.
I think I always want to make sure that I really do appreciate people listening. So I want to make sure that I like show the appreciation, and then depending on the situation, figure out who their favorite team is. You know, like I'm always down, but hey, like what's on top of your mind? You're a whatever fan, and like what's burning you up? Because I just like to hear that. You know, I think that it helps make the show better if we're talking about the stuff that the people who are listening to us enjoy. So we always appreciate when people say what up. I've seen a couple as I've been getting out a little more over the last couple weeks. So.
Seen a bunch over this past few months, been on the road for volleyball, met a bunch of fans of the show, and all of them wanted to talk. Hey, it was a big Aggie fan I met when I was out in Dallas. You know, met a lot of them. When I was in Chicago, met some Michigan fans. They're always a little salty because taking some shots. And of course, I'm not going to just let them off the hook and be like, well, there still is an asterisk, but.
Okay.
I can't resist.
Yeah, no, Danny's not less of a troll in person.
Oh, right, exactly. I'll just do it with a smile on my face. We're just having fun.
All right, let's go with, if you were, one last one here. Alex, if you were a commissioner of a conference besides the SEC and the Big Ten, what would you do to try and make it more competitive with the Big Two, besides the obvious, a better television contract? I would beat them to paying players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd almost be trying to, what, how do you do that?
You make you jump forward and you be like, hey, you know what? Here at the Atlantic Coast Conference, we just listed a bunch of jobs. It's called all the football players of our teams.
Like, hey, you undercut them at the knees. They don't want to play employees. We'll sign them up.
You just jump straight to the end and you get a little bump because of that. You know, I imagine they'll catch up eventually, and you know, television contract is what it is. But if you were trying to be competitive and close the competition gap, which isn't as wide as the financial gap, I think we all agree that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can still beat those teams that are making more money. It's happened for all of the 21st century, that teams that are not making as much money go out and win those games. Teams that, you know, Bud was mentioning, teams that might break the blue chip ratio. Team Oregon, Mariota Oregon, TCU, the first Clemson team. Like those were not as resource plentiful schools, and they went out and they were competitive against some of the best teams in the country, the haves, I guess you could say. So that'd be one idea.
I think Danny Chip took the best answer here. Like the question asked, make it more competitive. Does he mean on the field or like in the ratings in terms of like getting noticed?
I think you got to. To me, what matters is wins and losses, right?
But
get those.
I don't have another answer for that other than what you guys gave. So I guess I'll attack it from a different perspective. Like if I'm the Big 12. Nobody in my conference has any hope of winning a national title, in my opinion, because of the way that they bring in talent, unless they were to do what you guys did, which is jump the gun on paying the players. So I'm trying to maybe like incorporate some different rules that make the game more exciting, broadcast it in a different way, make our stuff like super open. Maybe we're miking up a lot of guys each game. Just make the product different, because I think we're going to have high-flying, exciting games with decent but not great talent. You know, so that's what I would do for that. With the ACC, I don't know. I think I would go to Boston College and say, hey, I know you don't want to be the guys that take the revenue cut, but if we go to the open market without these big schools, y'all are worth less than UConn. So pay now or pay more later, I think. But I don't know. I think the Big 12 is in a much better spot than the ACC is, obviously, because like there's not the disparate level of teams.
You know, everyone is occupying about the same resource investment world. Yeah.
Yeah, the Big 12 he has no top 15 programs and no, like, nobody really below like the 70th best program in the sport.
And you know what's interesting is that, you know, talking to some of the guys at ESPN and Fox who are airing the Big 12 games, they're trying to do what you're talking. They're trying to give more access and miking up and doing things to try to, I mean, they had the belt, right? The WWE Big 12 championship. Yeah. Like, they're trying to do things to make inroads, but ultimately it is about how much money you have.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll continue to see the latest on all that going forward. We know at least what college football is going to look like for 2024. We don't know exactly how it's going to play out, but we at least know what it's going to look like for 2024. And of course, over the next couple months, we will be going through the process of getting you set for the upcoming season as well. We will be back on Monday. Biggest transfer portal moves during this window. Again, we're trying to identify the player, the team, like the connection. Where did we see some actually significant moves during a window that lacked a little bit of buzz? And I know, as Bud has mentioned, and I'm sure we'll get into on Monday, it'll be a good thing for college football. We'll get into all that. So come join us Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern time. And you can follow him on Twitter at BudElliott3. You can follow him at Danny Cannell. Follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
See ya.
Bright shining light, Sarajevo, and they needed to kill that light.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2.
U2, they represent a personification of our resistance.
The Hollywood Reporter hails Kiss the Future, moving and inspirational.
Kiss the Future! Viva Sarajevo!
Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to Paramount+ to try it free. Terms apply.